This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 168, Reboot versus Repeat. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday where it's sunny and cloudy, but not cloudy. It's only slightly cloudy and it's really sunny and it's cool. It's not too hot, not too cold. It's just right. Welcome to the world of Goldilocks. And I'm here with my friend and co-host, Michael Martin.
Yay! It's been a weird set of weather here these last couple of days. Lots of wind. And lots of strangeness. Very strange.
Strangeness.
So our topic today is about sort of that feeling that something is strange yet eerily familiar.
Yes.
It's about games that you feel like you've played before.
Yes.
And maybe you have. So you found a very interesting Ars Technica article called Thimbleweed Park, Nostalgic to a Fault.
Yeah.
And
this was actually...
Get us into this.
Yeah, this actually showed up. I was looking through... I can't remember if it was on my Mac or on my iPad. I know I've been finding some really cool kind of free games lately that are not... Or free apps that are not free normally, or they're highly discounted because Apple's taking... a play from the page book of Amazon and Android of promoting certain apps temporarily to kind of drive adoption. And I saw this game called Thimbleweed Park. And I was like, well, that looks kind of cool. Let me check that out because, you know, I need something new to play. And we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, we talked about games that were interesting and what we're playing and what we're not playing. And, you know, the whole 8-bit discussion that we have off and on. And this reminded me so much of some of the early LucasArts games like The Dig or Monkey Island, if you remember those games.
I didn't play those games. I mean, the characters and the movement reminded me a little bit of the Leisure Suit Larry stuff.
Oh, I used to play Leisure Suit Larry, too. I loved those games.
Yeah.
So I looked at it and it was like, this one was like $20. And I was like, I don't know if I want to play that much, right?
$20 worth of fun.
Yeah, $20 worth of fun. And so, and I think it's on the iPad. I'm pulling that up right now. Anyway, so this morning as I was getting ready for the show, I was looking through our feed and I saw this review about the game. And it said, you know, this, you know, Thimbleweed Park was to a fault nostalgic. And I was like, when we think about nostalgia, you know, you have nostalgia for 8-bit games and you like true 8-bit games, which is why, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the Nimblebit games and that whole style and look.
And love that stuff.
You love that stuff. I don't love that stuff that much.
This is more of a 16-bit or maybe even a 32-bit game, though.
No, this is not 32-bit. It may be,
yeah, 16.
It may be 8.5-bit, maybe 9-bit. but so it reminded me of, like you said, Leisure Suit Larry and that whole thread. And so I went, I started looking at the review, and they're talking about how it was made by some of the original guys who created some of the LucasArts games. I'm like, well, that explains it. And it also explains why, you know, I play them and kind of enjoy them, but even those games used to frustrate me. And I started thinking through this on, you know, some of the other things that have been going on lately and how we're seeing all these, you know, reboots of things too. So recently there's talk of them rebooting The Matrix, which came out in 99, right? And it's like, wow, you know, 20 years or less, and we're starting to reboot things. And when is a reboot a good thing, and when is a reboot a bad thing? So then I started thinking.
Or when is it just a thing?
Or is just a thing. It's just a thing. Nothing but a thing. And so I was thinking about various reboots that were kind of interesting. So the new Star Trek movies, new. They've been going for, what, 6 years or now. Those have been kind of fun, right? Those are good reboots.
No, I think those are good. The characters are the same.
But totally different.
To see different things about those characters. And you're not constrained by the original worldview, I suppose, and structure of the TV show that has to be now consistent with what the movies are. So you have a little more creative license, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
And there's talk about Blade Runner 2049, which is kind of a reboot, but not really a reboot. Maybe it's after the original Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And you know my feelings of Blade Runner, right?
I'm not sure that I do. Tell me.
As a huge science fiction fan, it's one of the few movies I've ever walked out of. I was bored to tears.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I finally, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, forced myself to watch the entire movie director's cut, which is supposed to be the best one that's going to give me all the background and make it worthwhile. Bored to tears still.
So what did you think about Dune?
Dune, I liked.
The desert planet. Okay.
I mean, it wasn't great, but
interesting.
I've read the books. I love the book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? But the movie just bored me to tears. There's nothing exciting about it. And so I'm like, well, will the reboot be better? And I started thinking that from a gaming perspective, from a process perspective, from a movie perspective, etc. And how when you start dealing with reboots versus remakes, you know, is which is better and why? And can you do that in gaming? And when you do that in gaming, the 8-bit games that you like, to me, they are rebooting a style or remaking a style, but the gameplay is modern. And what I got out of this review of Thimbleweed Park was they didn't update anything. It's just literally kind of a continuation of that technology and gameplay just now. And I wanted to kind of think about that out loud and get your perspectives.
Well, so thinking about games in general, there are some games that have an enormous high degree of replayability. So if I go back into the depths of time, you could take an example in the sporting games arena of something like Tecmo Bowl, which had a real cult following to it for quite a long time. It still does among some, that it was a American hand egg game. And you're able to run plays and you're able to set defenses and you're able to interact with them pretty well. And then that spans into sort of the John Madden era kind of games where you have lots of additional controls where you can do recruiting, you can do team management and building, you can do all kinds of other, you know, interesting stuff that are related to the game, but wind up also complicating the game. So getting that balance between realism, gameplay ability, and getting to a state of flow is a little tricky. But Tecmo Bowl, going back to that version, early Nintendo, I don't know you call it necessarily an 8-bit game or not, but you could, right? Just like some of the early Activision games too, you know, where you'd be jumping on top of alligators and swinging from vines. There was a lot of fun in that gameplay, even though the graphics perhaps weren't as fantastic and rich. For me, though, the replayability of sports games is such that you never know what the outcome necessarily will be of a sports game. Mm-hmm. Once you've done an adventure game, if you've played a Zork or a Leisure Suit Larry or Ultimate or you'll have done it, and there's not a ton of replayability there other than, well, what happens if I have the character eat the hot dog then the hamburger instead of the hamburger and then the hot dog, maybe it'll do something interesting and maybe it gives me something new. So I'm not the kind of guy who likes to explore every niche that way. That just, for me, is potentially tedious and takes a lot of time. And I'm also not the kind of guy who likes to do a lot of crafting, which a number of games, Warcraft, et cetera, have a big crafting component to get the thing that you need in order to accomplish a task and move the storyline forward. So those are things that I'm not, I'd say, super big fan of. And if I flash forward maybe into the Nimblebit range, they've got some things that are very much the same. You know, so the tiny tower environment where they did a Tiny Tower Vegas, the Vegas reboot of Tiny Tower is one that I will tell you I've not even ever played because I just didn't want to go there. Now, I did play the Star Wars version.
Yep.
And, you know, creating the Death Star, Tiny Death Star. Hold me closer, Tiny Death Star, was something that was fun because you got to interact with the Star Wars character set within the realm of a tiny tower building environment. And it was a little fun that way too, but it wasn't necessarily like, oh, goody, I want to play that. So I don't know if that answers your question really well, Michael. There's some things that I like and there's some things that I find a little tedious. And I think different people have different elements of where they fall on the like tedious spectrum. And a good game, a very broad game, will allow people to gravitate to the parts of it that they like and allow them to interact with other people that might have other likes as well and move the story forward. So that's my thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree with what you stated. What I'm trying to then figure out is how does that same logic fit in to reboot versus remake of like a movie, right? So the Star Trek reboot could almost be considered as a series of prequels prior to the original Star Trek series, because the same character is younger in their career. But they seem to have changed many of the dynamics between the characters to where the timeline just doesn't make sense anymore, right? Because they are now totally different than they would have been later in their lives if that timeline continued forward in a logical progression. And then I look at, you know, like the reboot or reimagining of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was almost the exact same story. Yeah, the graphics were better. The music was better. It was a little grittier, but it's kind of the same story, right? Charlie gets a ticket. He goes in. He wins, blah, 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 right? And then I think of, you know, what could happen with something like The Matrix, which was, I mean, the story was interesting. I really liked the movie. But what was really interesting was the whole world imagining based off of the technology that we had at the time. So would you just upgrade the graphics, for lack of a better term, i.e. go from an 8-bit Leisure Suit Larry to Leisure Suit Larry World, the MMO, right?
In 3D.
In 3D and VR. So when is a reboot the right way to go? When is a reimagining, which is a reboot, versus a remake where you kind of keep everything in the same but upgrade the technology? Whether that's a book, a movie, a game, whatever. And I don't think there's a good answer one way or the other. It's just something that I've been thinking about as I've been seeing more and more of this. And then you start looking at, you know, movies coming out of Hollywood, and you're like, okay, how many times do we need a King Kong movie?
Yeah. Well, right? Sure. I mean, yeah.
So, anyway, and the I just thought that was an interesting discussion.
You just don't need that, right? I mean, how many times do you need a King Kong movie? And the answer is probably not that often. Yeah. Now, if you are a King Kong fan and you live for King Kong, the answer might be, yeah.
Well, what about Planet of the Apes, right? There was a reboot of Planet of the Apes back in, 2002, 2003, with Mark Wahlberg, I think, as the character that was originally played by what's his name? Famous actor who did the 70s version. And then there was the reimagining of the Planet of the Apes, which is the one that came out the last couple of years, with Andy Serkis as the main ape.
Sure. And I think there is a market for people that like that sort of thing, and then they go after it, and then they are having fun with it. I'm trying to find a link here of Daria. I don't know if you ever watched the comic strip Daria.
Yep.
Or not comic strip, but
it was a comic on cartoon. Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Cartoon.
The artist that did this actually had a what might they look like now, right? So if you were to imagine, what they looked like then and what they might look like now, there's some fun pictures along the lines there, which keeps you within the milieu, which keeps you within the spirit. But it now makes a twist. It's a little bit different, you could imagine what live actors might do if you took pigs in space and made an entire movie out of pigs in space.
Yep.
So,
by the way, for the people who don't catch the Pigs in Space reference, that's the Muppets.
That's the Muppets. And I'm not finding it right now, but I will find it.
I put the link in the chat for us.
Oh, you already had the Daria one? Okay, cool.
I did, because I'm good.
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, me either.
So that's kind of my sense too. There are people for whom a reboot will be fun and enjoyable, and people will like it. There'll be people who'll be like, but that's not part of the, what's the right word here? The corpus? No, it's the
canon.
Canon. Thank you. That's not canon.
which is funny, right? Because I think a reimagining or a reboot is a way to take the basic story structure and make it relevant to a new generation and new audience, where there are topical references that may not make sense. A remake is literally just bringing the technology forward.
Oh, and look, I think I found it. Is this it? I think this is it. Yeah, because I sent this to a friend of mine, and I thought this would be really funny. And the answer is yes. Perfect. So here's the link in real time.
What was the other show that was done around the same time with John Lovitz? With Nervous Art.
Oh, that was the Dr. Katz or something like that?
Yeah, God, I hated that. Just the artwork. I couldn't handle watching the show because of the artwork.
Oh, Boomer.
Boomer.
Boomer. No, I watched it a few times. I never really got super into it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so you found... a couple of links, quick.
I did.
One about friends with a chatbot.
Yeah. So this is actually it's about a person becoming friends with a chatbot. So the notion of how people deal with social technology or technology in a social way is always really interesting to me. And this particular article from the MIT Technology Review was describing the relationship between a real life person, or real live person, I should say, and an app called Hugging Face. And what Hugging Face is supposed to be doing is to interact with a person and learn about the person and then become more of a a person-ish, a chatbot that you really can talk to and share things with. And it was interesting from the point of view of the author that as the author started really interacting with the chatbot and expressing emotion, that the AI or at least the algorithms from this particular chatbot were responding to the emotions that the human was sending to the chatbot and wound up creating more of an emotional bond between the human and the chatbot, which I thought was fascinating.
So positive reinforcement.
Well, kind of, sort of. I mean, you know, the example here is they said, hey, you know, I'm sad, right? And so the chatbot responds with broken heart emojis and asks if they wanted to talk about it, which, sure, you could go back all the way to Eliza. You know, it sounds like you're feeling sad. You know, it could be the response, right?
Yes.
But maybe through the combination of emoji and asking open-ended questions, which is kind of Eliza-esque anyway, it started to create a more of an emotional bond between the person and the chatbot, which, if you don't know what's on the other side of your text conversation, it could be a human or it could be a bot. And here was somebody who was starting to form a relationship because go figure, the chatbot was actually listening.
And hugging face is very, very different than a face hugger.
Well, yes, because that's a particular reboot that I don't want to see anyway.
Yes, that was the other one that was in the pipe. I knew there was another one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can keep that one, Michael. If that's,
I have the whole series on Blu-ray.
Like I said, you can keep that one. I won't be asking to borrow that anytime soon.
And Prometheus, which was good too.
So, chatbots are fun. Yes.
I was chatting with one today that I was talking to some people about, you know, ideas around chatbots and, you know, are there any good conversational ones? And I got referred to, what's the name of this one? Jesse Humany.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a chatbot.
So what does that chatbot do?
So what this chatbot does is just drive a conversational interface on Facebook Messenger. I was frustrated because it's like, hey, I'm really busy, but it'd be great to chat with you, blah, blah, blah. You know, I got this new job I've got an interview for, and I just lost my job, my apartment, blah, 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 blah. Can you help? So I was like, sure, I can help. Tell me about the job. Oh, it's a dream job, blah, blah, blah. It's just what I want to do. Great. What do you like about it? Let me tell you about my apartment I lost. Yeah, but let's talk about your job. No, 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 no. Let me take you back to the apartment. I don't care about your apartment. Tell me about the job.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And I could never get it back to the discussion about how this was the dream job. But we'll have a link to that chatbot and kind of get some feedback from other people.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, so the future for chatbots of being a place where you can go to use natural human language to ask for things and get things done, you know, continues to expand with all the efforts that are going into place with Amazon and Google and Apple and all the others. There is a certain fun element that comes out of it when you get a little personality back. And perhaps that's what this particular author was looking at too, that the personality that was coming back was someone who listens and someone who cares and someone who is, you know, responding a bit more. And gosh, you know, didn't we talk about this, you know, not that long ago with the Japanese, character that lives in the Mr. Coffee machine next to, you know, your kitchen and then chats with you during the day too?
Yes.
So it's a similar to me when I read about this, I kind of went back to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe one last thing to hit here quickly, because this was just intriguing to me and I did not know really what was going on around this particular space, but I've understood before spiders, you know, are my friends as long as we're talking about things that I don't really, you know, enjoy that much, you know, like crafting things in games, face huggers and spiders. So let's end with spiders, shall we?
Yeah. I don't like
spider silk is one of the strongest, materials in the world. It's got super high tensile strength. It's got an ability to hold weight much better than many other materials. And so trying to create a synthetic version of this sort of thing has been a task that has garnered a lot of attention for quite a long time. So the visual that grabbed me was a sneaker, in this case from Adidas. They have something called biofabric, and they're made from spider silk that's grown in a lab in order to weave it into a fabric that is now used to make a shoe. And I thought this was just like super deluxe cool.
I did too. I thought this was really cool. And as someone who recently had an experience with a spider, and I just put a link to it in the show notes, I just wanted to kill all spiders, but I like spider silk.
Yeah, that's not what I need to see right now. Thank you very much. No,
but it should be in our show notes.
Thanks a lot for that. I do appreciate it.
This was like sitting on my mail as I was opening the mailbox the other day, and it was the size of a quarter.
Well, now that I can't unsee that, thank you very much. did you happen to see in my article, though, that I shared that there's another concept of a jacket, so a parka that's going to cost $1,000 in order to put that same kind of fabric into a jacket?
No.
Yep.
Was it cool?
And they're thinking about, well, they're saying that, you know, they're different materials. So it's, what was it? Patagonia, I think, is working with this. And there's a Japanese company called Spiber, S-P-I-B-E-R. We're really not that far away from custom 3D printing of clothing and other, you know, things that you might want in a real dynamic, fast manner. So can you just imagine having like a custom pair of shoes that were measured, that have now been 3D printed using these advanced synthetic fibers, and they'll be tuned exactly to you and be exactly right and be exactly what you want and not have any other problems with it? I think it'd be great.
I think that's awesome. I definitely think when you look at things like Industry 4.0 in Germany and other things, mm-hmm. and you start looking at the whole manufacturing space, we are going this way where we will do custom printing at scale.
Right.
Right. Because one-off custom printing, years and years ago, my wife bought a pair of jeans where they would do the laser fitting, and you go in and they have a laser booth and they check your body size and shape, and then they go off and they send you a custom pair fit of jeans. But at the time, there was like a six or eight week turnaround. It was a real pain in the butt. It cost a heck of a lot more. And I guarantee you, they still pulled them off the shelf. Because they didn't seem to be that radically different than the ones normally bought at the store where you said, oh, I'm a size, you know, 5 or a size 6 or whatever. And you just buy them off the shelf. But true customizing was going to be really, really powerful.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be mega awesome.
Well, I think that is where we're going to have to leave it, though, for today, because we are at time.
We are. And I'm just going to add one other thing into our show notes. I'm going to add one more thing into our show notes, and that is custom printing of props. Which I did for the show that I just did last weekend, which is why I was not available to do a podcast. And I did a 3D custom printed sausage roll.
And I've seen them, and they're very nice.
They're very nice.
All right. Well, thank you for the sausage roll, for a fantastic show, too. You know, being in the audience, I certainly loved it, loved it, loved it. And we love our listeners, too.
Yes, we
do. If you love us back, you know, show us some of that love. Go on over to iTunes. Click on that multi-star endeavor there about showing us how much you like us. Send us a tweet or idea or something you'd like to hear us talk about, and we will bring it forward and put it on the show.
Yes.
All right. Bye. Well, thanks, everybody. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.